ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, I am Jason DeRosso, and I am back sitting on the couch at ABC Radio National, ready to talk television and streaming series with my colleague, Wenli Ma. Wenli, how are you?
Hello, I'm well.
You haven't been watching the World Cup. We were discussing this outside the studio, whereas I am quite tired. I've swapped the Sydney Film Festival for World Cup viewing.
I'm super well rested. I've been sleeping incredibly well, normal hours, no World Cup watching. Not even a single minute.
I envy you. I'm still having to squeeze in my other watching time for work. But I have squeezed in a couple of shows this week, and we will begin with an Australian series, which is called The Killings at Parish Station.
Something happened at the research station.
Happened slowly enough, they managed to get a distress signal out.
Hello?
Mum?
What's it like where you are?
Well, it's hot. Very dry.
It's really dusty. Look, I gotta go.
I love you.
This is a site run by the Parish family. This will be national news.
You ever dealt with the parishes?
Not doing anything stupid, are you, love?
This is my facility.
This is my crime scene.
This is noise. If you focus on the noise, that's all you'll hear.
Four dead, one survivor found.
You got a visitor.
How much do you remember about the parish case?
What is this? You're writing the book.
Body was found. Teeth were removed. It's happening again. It's all in your head.
That's a problem. It's all in my head.
Everything that's been happening is cyclical.
Did you know that's incredibly annoying?
I'm looking for something.
Okay, this is a thriller with some horror edges.
Cosmic horror,
the makers are calling it. It stars Mia Wasikowska, Heather Mitchell, Xavier Samuel. It's a show about a young female detective and her colleague who investigate a multiple murder event at a remote scientific research center in the middle of the desert, and they uncover a conspiracy that has this occult dimension. It involves a very powerful family. This all happens in the 1980s. And then we're alternating to kind of the present day. It's 2024, a contemporary timeline where Heather Mitchell plays Mia Wasikowska's older self. And she's been institutionalized. Like, the events we see in the 80s have never been resolved. They've taken a huge toll on her life personally and professionally. Emma Lung pops up as an estranged daughter in the contemporary timeline. But guess what? There's a new set of murders.
It's all connected.
That bear eerie resemblance to the 80s incident.
Yes, it's all connected. Six episodes, which I think is the right amount for this show because it was quite intense at times. I went into it not knowing what to expect. So this is a Stan production and, you know, not trying to be mean, but I have found a lot of their productions are a bit mid, and I found this to be a cut above what Stan normally produces. And I think it is the cosmic horror element of it. Like, I feel like they're going for some, you know, H.P. Lovecraft stuff going on there. And it's more ambitious than I thought it would be. It was more gripping than I thought it would be. It was also much more gory than I was expecting. There are certainly scenes and episodes. There's a flashback episode in episode 5, which seems to be very much a trend where they, you know, where a show builds momentum and then just lets it stop and they flash back to, like, and this is what really happened in the lead up to these killings that I was not expecting.
It's a lever that a lot of shows pull, don't they? Because they deliberately leave a few things unannounced, mysterious, unexplained, and then it's always time to lift the flagging kind of prospects of the flagging energy of a show at about, you know, the penultimate episode.
Yeah, or maybe usually midway the through, second to last.
And then, you know, here's what really happened. And we all get interested again in the mystery.
I mean, it can work both ways because sometimes the show can be building momentum and then all of a sudden it cuts to this flashback and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I was just getting into that. I'm not sure I wanted it at this point in time. But this one was, I think, okay. Look, I thought Mia Wasikowska was pretty good. I think Heather Mitchell's great, even though it's a bad wig, which can be distracting.
Yeah, I don't like Heather Mitchell in this, I've got to say.
Oh, really? Do you feel like there's no continuity between the two?
I feel a bit like that with all the characters who play the older characters, the older versions of all the characters in the 80s. But I also feel that because she's been institutionalized, the character is kind of a bit affectless. There's not, and so I think this show's doing something weird where it wants an emotional kind of payoff by the end, because it is about mothers and daughters and estrangement and family and stuff. And yet it blocks itself from getting there because Heather Mitchell's character in that, you know, contemporary timeline is a little cold for me. So yes, I'm watching it thinking this needs to go Hallmark, but it's kind of got its brakes on. It's like trying to go from 0 to 100 and it's got the handbrake still on or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right in that it's going for an emotional payoff and it's not getting there. And I feel like this show is very much plot and story driven, and
it's so plot and story driven.
It's not a lot of character work. I don't think there's a lot of depth to any of the characters.
I totally agree.
But it's very much like, here's what's happening, here's the mystery, here is how we're going to unravel it. The other thing I was going to say that really annoyed me is in the first episode, they almost have this sort of framing device of these contemporary podcasters. And what
I
like
that.
No, I really didn't like that.
You didn't?
I didn't like it.
I don't think they do it well. Tonally, it's a bit of a clash,
yeah,
but it is one sort of gesture that speaks to television in 2026. There's a bit of a self-awareness. There's a frame within the frame. I don't think they do it well, no, but it's a nice idea that there's true crime podcasters.
What they're trying to do, and the one of the podcasters does get folded into the story later on as well, but it felt a little bit like they weren't confident enough that the audience would understand what's going on without these external characters explaining the story.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you. At times it's very big budget, and that desert location where the massacre happens, that historic massacre happens, is really great.
Yeah, it actually looks really good.
Looks really good. And yet there are other bits where, I mean, and there are a lot of actors from Australian TV you'll recognise here, especially older actors, where it's
Robert Taylor.
Alan
Dale,
who's great, is a great actor, plays it real baddie here. But there are moments where it does feel like Neighbours does the Wicker Man. It really does. And I agree with you with character. I mean, you know, you watch an American show like this and there's no texture here. I didn't get a sense that, you know, there's real differences between the characters thanks to specificity of class or accent or they try it. You can see them trying, but
they're just serving the story, and you're not getting, I mean, I thought about True Detective, the more recent season with Jodie Foster, because it's a research station that was isolated with a massacre that's unexplained. But you know,
great
this one's
comparison.
Very hot, whereas in True Detective was very cold. And I do think like the setting and the milieu is very vibey, and I feel like they've done a good job in like creating a atmosphere. But yes, story driven, not character driven. But better than I was expecting.
But yeah, but we watch these things for character, don't we? I mean, we kind of know where stories are going more or less. But and you want this kind of this granular, really vivid, memorable detail about characters and what they like to eat or this or that. They try it in the spring roll scene with a prop there and you know, a few things, but it doesn't really work. And it feels like people are wearing – it's one of those Australian shows where some of it feels like people are wearing wigs even when they're not wearing wigs. Mm. You know what I mean? But a question for you though, there's no – I was surprised that there's no Indigenous element to it, given that it starts off in the desert and all that. And I'm not saying it's just weird in 2026 that there wouldn't be. And that's not a criticism.
Yeah, actually, that didn't even occur to me. You're completely right.
What is it about? What is this show fundamentally about, do you think? Is it just mothers and daughters, and not just, but, you know, is it about that? That
I
guilt
mean, I
about.
I think it is trying to be about that, but I don't think they established that necessarily very well in the original, like in the 1987 timeline, as much as they're trying to hook onto it in the 2024 one.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think it is trying to play into that whole crime, thriller, horror adjacent genre thing. Like, I feel like it's a genre play more than a thematic play.
Yeah, yeah. Look, it's the first real major thing from Ben Jenkins, who's the creator and one of the writers. He's worked on things like The Feed and the Chaser, which is, so, you know, it's his first big thing. It's very ambitious. Mm. Look, I'd encourage them all to sort of go on and prosper and do more stuff. A lot of the producing team and some of the sort of production team are sort of from Australian TV that you recognize, like Underbelly and you know, Paper Giants, Cleo, those sorts of shows. And unfortunately, sometimes I agree, it does feel a bit mid, but it's ambitious. So you've got to sort of
it's ambitious. And I think some of the production values are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've been talking about The Killings at Parish Station, 6-part miniseries, really, 1-hour episodes, more or less.
45. You know,
40 to 45 minutes, yeah. It's screening over at Stan. next to something completely different, a comedy about a sportsman who suffered, you know, career reputational meltdown after being discovered as a...
Yeah, so this is about a former footballer, American. His fictional name is Reggie Dinkins, played by Tracy Morgan, and he was banned for life at the height of his career because it was discovered that he was gambling on the game. But in his defense, as he says, he only ever gambled on himself.
Let's play a clip.
You were immediately banned for life from football.
Yeah, but I only bet on myself. Not only bet to win, that was more motivation to play good. Sort of how like a waitress works for tips.
Without you, your teammates lost the Super Bowl to Seattle 61-2. You were dropped by Progresso Soup. Your episode of Ghost Whisperer never even aired.
Yeah, and that really messed up Melinda's season arc. Okay? That's not what this documentary is about, dude.
Like I told you on the phone, we don't really know what this documentary is about yet. It will emerge.
You know, I told you, this was a puff piece, okay, that I'm paying for.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Innocuous. Daniel Radcliffe's pretty good as this.
I love Daniel Radcliffe's post-Harry Potter career. He has a Tony Award. And I don't know if you ever saw this show from a few years ago. It was called Miracle Workers. It ran for 4 seasons. It had Daniel Radcliffe, Steve Buscemi, and Australian actor Geraldine Viswanathan. And every season they changed, you know, situations. 1 year it was like on the Oregon Trail, and another year was in the Middle Ages. He's got really good comedic timing. I think he's funny.
Yeah, you know, me too. I mean, I like this whole framing device of the film within the film. And look, this is just, you know, very short episodes. It's a broadcast half hour. It's from NBC. But I mean, you know, it plays out. If you're watching on a streaming service, you will, you know, they're 25-minute episodes or something. Everyone, it's a show that knows what it wants to be.
This is a Tina Fey production.
Yes.
In the sense of that Tina Fey is not on the writing team, but she's executive producing. It comes from her production company, and the two guys who created it, Robert Carlock, is a longtime collaborator of Tina Fey, and Sam Means, and both of them have worked on 30 Rock, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Girls Five Ever. So that's the vibe. It is absurd. You know, there are sometimes weird non sequitur cutaways. Tracy Morgan obviously played Tracy Jordan in 30 Rock, and he has such a specificity in his rhythm, in how he delivers lines.
I don't like him.
Oh, see, I really vibe
like
with
him
it.
Or don't.
And I feel like you need to be so in tune with it to write for him. And I think because Robert Carlock has been writing for him for like 20 years, that it sort of works. Because I think they might have also, might have gone back before then, like SNL or something. And there's just like a great ensemble of characters around him, like the ex-wife who is his manager, there's an influencer girlfriend who's much smarter than you think she is.
There's the deadbeat friend living in the basement.
Yeah, played by Bobby Moynihan. Mm, and, you know, everyone has this great generosity of spirit and warmth, and they're all messed up in different ways. So Daniel Radcliffe's character is this Oscar-winning documentarian who's been brought on for like a little bit of credibility, but he's also had his own public meltdown.
It's a show really about trying to rediscover your mojo, but also kind of get out of a moment of public humiliation in some way.
Yes.
But even the ex-wife who's trying to get back on the dating scene, everyone's trying to recover a sense of self-respect.
Yeah. And then there's just like, you know, a very joke density rhythm to it. So you get to have a lot of laughs, and you just get to kind of, you know, sit with these people that are trying to strive, I guess. They're trying to improve their lot, even though they have it pretty good already. But it's really funny, and I just love the rhythm of this world, of those Tina Fey productions. Big, big plus for me.
Yeah. I think this show is pretty good. I mean, you know, you can watch it in an afternoon.
Easily.
You know, not many eps, and they're all about 20, 25 minutes. As I say, I think it knows what it wants to be, and it's got a great sense of character.
It does. Actually, here you've got, you know, 25-minute episodes, and these characters are very well established within about 3.
Yeah.
And it's got a second season, so we're going to get more of it soon.
That is The Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins, season 1. There's about 10 episodes, 20 to 25-minute episodes, available to watch on 7+. And a disclaimer, Wenli does work for 7 West. So,
same parent company.
Same parent company. That is it for another episode of The Couch. It's been fun. I'm Jason DeRosso.
I'm Wenli Ma.
See ya.
Bye.
We'll be right back. You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.